The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July 18, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, Congress is debating the Farm Bill and a possible reduction in the means test to receive farm payments. The specialty crop growers say they like what happened in yesterday's Farm Bill discussion, and Japan just cannot get over the mad cow disease risk from the U.S. beef imports, this despite the larger risk from its own livestock industry. Dave Dickey will have full details in just a moment, and then I'll tell you why Illinois farmers need not worry about the western bean cutworm, at least this season. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Pines Plus Waterscapes and Nature's Way Incorporated, now carrying neem oil, a naturally organic product with many uses around the home. Information on neem oil is at Pines Plus Waterscapes, Champaign, 355-2266, or Nature's Way Incorporated in Effingham, 800-369-1247.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit, September contract at 623.5, up 22.25. December futures at 642.5, 425.25 higher. September corn futures $3.27, up 4.5 cents. December at 342.5, up 5.75. And the March contract at 357.5. They were 6.25 higher. December futures at 391.5, up 5.75 for the day. August soybean futures 17.5 cents higher, $8.51 the settlement price. September's at 860 at 16.75 higher. November beans 16 cents higher at 876.5 for this year. November beans for next year at 901.5. We're up 16.5 for the day. Bean meal futures August contract up $4.40 at 226.60. Bean oil August contract there at 37.50. That's up 0.58 for the day. Mercantile exchange August feeder cattle down a nickel, $91.37.5. The settlement price, the October live cattle at $97.27.5. 52.5 cents higher. August feeder cattle at 115.40, down 42.5 cents. The Septembers were up a dime at 116.42.5. August live hogs, or rather lean hogs, at 73.85 were down 17.5 cents on this day. At the crude oil market, August contract now at $75.08 a barrel, up $1.06. The Septembers are up $1.19 at $75.30, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,862. Down 109 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Wednesday afternoon, and that means we talk with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, kind of an interesting day at the Chicago Board of Trade. A couple of rough days the first 2 days of the week, and finally a little rebound. And is that what we're just looking at here, a rebound, or is there something more afoot?
Well, it's always kind to go to the leader of the show or leader of the band, and of course the wheat market was the leader of the show today.
You bet.
And it was based on export demand, I think Morocco, and the French have a little problem with wet, soft red winter wheat, and the U.S. wheat is basically the big soft wheat market demand factor. It was up a mighty 22 cents and with a very wide basis in a lot of the Midwest and export demand. I'm sure you're going to see basis levels probably improve rather quickly as well. Crude oil, for example, today was very aggressive. We saw energy markets that were up over a dollar a barrel. T-Bone Pickens was sitting very relaxed in China with, very confident, talking to the Chinese about the need to use liquefied gas in their energy portfolio mix. gasoline stocks, and there is an old rule in the world of commodity trading. As oil goes, corn and soybeans usually follow. But it was basically the weather people were projecting fairly good rainfall, even in those dry areas west of Des Moines. And as a result of that, you know, even 1 to 2 inches for the heartland, Champaign, Urbana, WILL land. And as a result of that, you know, it does look like that the rainfall potential is going to be fairly adequate for the weekend.
I want to come back to the crude oil just a bit because we're no longer in that $60 barrel of range. We've run up here at $75 for the crude oil. How high is high in this crude?
Well, Goldman Sachs put out a statement at $90 a barrel oil. We do know that energy policy has been a major political issue in American politics for, you know, since World War II. Our general impression is that the amount of available oil is tighter, and the amount of oil under control by basically unfriendly sources, you know, continues to get larger. Industrial nations like the Pacific Rim countries are using an enormous amount of energy. And as a result of that, that's also created this boom in the corn market and ethanol demand and renewable energy.
I suppose all in all, if you were to look at it, if you wanted to say you wanted to sell off in the commodity markets for agriculture and you wanted something to happen in the energy markets, you'd really want a sell-off in the commodity markets and a boom in the energy markets just about the time we were discussing the farm bill. Probably works out to the benefit of the producer, I would think.
Well, we still need a good safety net for the American producer and farmer, Todd. And, you know, it probably is not going to cost the taxpayers much to have that safety net in the third place. And this energy, renewable energy boom is creating a lot of employment, you know, right in the heartland of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and Iowa, Minnesota, and the Midwest. And, of course, that's a boom to keep smart young men and women employed right in the heartland.
Now, let's talk about this, the losses that we've suffered in the corn pit just a bit for the week. Sharply down on Monday, followed suit on Tuesday, a little rally back this afternoon, but not by much. Where do you think this market is headed?
Well, you know, the corn crop does look great, you know, and my friends down in Little Egypt need rain, and there's a good chance that they're going to get rain down in the far southern part of the state. It looks like a big corn crop in the state of Illinois. And with that and the potential rain, if it does occur, as our four major private weather forecasters indicate, west of Des Moines, we do think that corn prices could have some further price erosion. It's popular to say somewhere in that $3.25 to $3 mark is a potential season's low. A lot of it depends on just what the big yield is, but it does look like we're going to have a fairly good crop, at least in central Illinois, as of July 18th.
The futures market and the cash market will be two different things as we head through harvest. How much basis erosion, if any, might you consider?
Well, one of the functions of this delivery system is to have the cash and futures work in tandem, and we are out of sync a little bit here. And the basis levels do look enormously wide, and I do know that we'll probably have, if we do get this crop to the marketplace, we will have, you know, we will tax our storage and transportation system to probably some, you know, greatest levels that we've seen in the last pre-Katrina and pre bin buster year back when we had that surprise crop several years ago.
Better talk about the mercantile exchange just a bit for me.
The Chinese continue to be a rumored buyer of pork. Their pork supplies are down, and that's one reason why I think sometime in the next early fall time frame, we will see the Chinese back in the soybean market in a big way. Obviously, diet is an important part of it. They're going into the Olympic deals, and, you know, what a better way to celebrate the Olympics is to have good quality American pork on the dinner table.
Boy, this has got to be only good news for the livestock industry in the States when half of the pork in the world is raised in that one country and they still need to import pork.
And, you know, it's you know, we do have the surplus supply and the quality, and, you know, we can supply the pork at a good price to them.
We appreciate you being with us.
Have a profitable day.
Hey, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson and Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. AM 580's own Mike Sola says a flash flood watch is in effect for northwestern Illinois and central Illinois, and a flood watch is in effect for portions of northeastern Illinois and western Indiana. That through tomorrow morning. Tonight, he calls for in the northern and central sections mostly cloudy skies, a few showers, some thunderstorms. He says those will be most numerous in the northwestern part of Illinois. In the south, Mike says partly cloudy skies, lows ranging from 65 in northwestern Illinois to 75 in the southwestern part of the state. Tomorrow, in northern and central sections, partly mostly cloudy. Occasional showers and thunderstorms in the south, increasing cloudiness, showers and thunderstorms arriving during the afternoon. Highs tomorrow from around 80 in northern Illinois to 94 in the far south. Tomorrow, minimum relative humidity levels will range from 45% in southwestern Illinois to nearly 70% in northeastern Indiana. Wind speeds will be light out of the south to near 30 miles an hour in the northern part of Indiana. The extended forecast, cooler and dry weather through the weekend, will give way to warm up next week. Temperatures will be near average Monday and Tuesday before warming to above average by midweek. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL Urbana. I'm Todd Gleason, your Director of Ag Programming. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with all of the day's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the House Agriculture Committee continues its markup of Farm Bill 2007 today. Among the items still to be debated, a reduction in the means test for receiving farm subsidies. Currently, producers are ineligible at a gross adjusted income level of $2.5 million. Urban lawmakers on the House Ag Committee want the AGI limit lowered. USDA proposed a $200,000 limit. Today, the committee is considering a $1 million cap, but sources say that figure could be reduced further. Producers would be able to collect on just one entity, and payments would be capped at $125,000, $60,000 for direct payments, and $65,000 for countercyclical payments. The current three-entity rule cap is $210,000. Tuesday, specialty crop interests were satisfied. Dennis Cardoza of California says he's pleased with increases in specialty crop funding from $685 million to $1.6 billion over 5 years. And Peterson says he's found some extra dollars for nutrition and energy titles from savings from bills in the Ways and Means Committee and a House-passed bill that cut oil company tax breaks and royalties.
By and large, the conservation money has been, the money has been found to fund the priorities, and it's in the bill. We have the research, or the fruit and vegetable provisions have been worked out with the hard work of Mr. Cardoza and his subcommittee, where they are now satisfied with what we have in the bill. So I would not characterize this as not being an adequate bill and not being funded.
But Peterson says he's still looking for additional funding for his alternative farm bill proposal. Peterson says he needs an additional $2 billion for conservation programs, $5 billion for a disaster program, and funding to expand the grassland reserve program from 1 to 5 million acres. Funding remains a huge issue. Ranking House Agriculture Committee Republican Bob Goodlatte says without adequate funding, the farm bill could unravel in floor debate.
The possibility that this farm bill will in its current form, with the lack of some of the funding, will invite a plethora of crippling amendments on the House floor is very real. American agriculture needs a safety net, and if we can't guarantee that we can protect that safety net, then we have no business taking a bill to the floor of the House.
House leaders want to bring the farm bill to the floor the week of July 30th. Japan says it still has serious concerns about U.S. mad cow disease, even though the Organization for Animal Health gave the U.S. a controlled risk status last month. Japanese officials are pointing at the OIE report and citing that U.S. cattle are still vulnerable to BSE because the U.S. has failed to strengthen feed controls. The OIE decision concluded that there is still room for improvement. Since 1987, the U.S. has used a number of specified risk materials in cattle feed. The FDA is considering a ban on such materials in cattle feed and pet food, but those deliberations appeared stalled. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can sign up for our absolutely free weekend newsletter. And you can download the MP3 files of the programs you might have missed during the day. That's at willag.org, the MP3 files there for your listening pleasure. You can also sign up to have those delivered directly to your computer as a podcast. willag.org. Up next, Iowa farmers have been battling the western bean cutworm for about half a decade, but those in the state of Illinois and eastward have not dealt with this pest. I'll tell you why it should not yet be a concern for corn farmers in Illinois. Based on the reports in Illinois so far, western bean cutworm moths have been found in very few locations, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Kevin Steffi. He goes on to say that where the western bean cutworm moths have been found, mostly in northwestern Illinois, the capture rates have been really small. The moth showed up for the first time in Illinois in 2004, and Steffi says he has begun using the Iowa experience, which is well documented, to gauge when and if farmers in Illinois will need to take the western bean cutworm more seriously.
Despite its name, it's actually a pest of corn. It got its name originally as a pest of dry beans out in the western United States. But it is a pest of corn that damages the ear. Very much like the corn earworm will damage the ear, the western bean cutworm will crawl down from the eggs that are laid up near the top of the plant down to the silks and then penetrate the ear either through the silks or right through the side of the husk and can cause some very significant damage by chewing up kernels on the ear.
It doesn't mean the insect pest of corn, yeah, that's right, corn, can be ignored. The western bean cutworm first showed up in the dry edible beans of the northwestern corn belt. Steffi says when it moved into Iowa, the insect decided to feed on ears of the corn plant.
The western bean cutworm, up until 2000, was basically relegated to the western portion of Iowa. And from 2000 through 2004, it spread very rapidly to the east, as I indicated, showing up in Illinois for the first time in 2004. And the numbers that were being captured in Iowa, where it has become an established pest of concern, have been very large. In Illinois, the numbers being captured are very low by comparison.
While there isn't much good statistical information about when the western bean cutworm will lay eggs in Illinois, Kevin Steffi says right now is probably the prime time. So if you're inclined to look for this new pest of corn in Illinois, he says to start looking right now. For information about what to look for and how to look for it, he suggests visiting the North Central IPM Center website. Just search Google for North Central IPM Center. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Time now for our look at the cash grain market. Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Well, we've had kind of a topsy-turvy week. First couple of days hard down, a little bit of a turnaround the day in the wheat and in the beans. Corn futures managing a bit of a gain, too. How has the basis been handling it?
Well, usually when the board goes down, the basis goes up and vice versa, but the basis continues to erode in the beans, not quite as rapidly as it did there for a while, but we've even lost probably, 7 or 8 cents out of train values here the last week. So there must be some corn moving somewhere because the basis in the corn is weakening a little bit as well. So not too good on the basis levels, Todd.
Are you surprised that corn is moving? Is that coming out of the commercials? Where do you think?
I'm not sure because there's nothing moving here. I mean, the farmers are either satisfied with what they've sold. I'm not sure how much inventory there is left out there. I think there are some farmers who have a lot rather than a lot of farmers who have a little, but there's hardly anything moving here. It's been like a morgue here in the office and the elevator, so I'm not sure what's feeding the market, but the basis levels have slipped some.
And you say that happened for both the corn and the beans?
Mm-hmm. Both corn and beans.
Any explanation for the soybeans? Did they just decide to go ahead and move it on the old crop at these levels?
Well, you know, they've been moving a lot of beans all along, and we still have a big surplus of beans, you know. I mean, they're talking like maybe a half a billion bushel being taken into harvest, so you have a big surplus of beans, you're going to see wide basis levels, and here we are, it's only July. I hate to think what it might be come harvest time, what these basis levels will be, corn and beans both. Beans because we have a lot of old beans left, corn because we have one huge crop growing out there and it's going to be hard to handle.
Yeah, tell me about it in your area. Has it finally come around looking pretty decent?
We have a really good crop growing here. I mean, the sand got hurt somewhat, but there's no doubt about it. I think the corn's pretty much made here. We had 1 to 2 inches of rain yesterday. We've got more coming in tonight and tomorrow, and it's going to be a bin buster the way it looks right now, Todd.
And so your farmers are probably pretty happy, but they're watching the price erode, or are they scared about that, or are they just thinking that the market will come back by the time we get around to next spring?
Well, they're just sick about this loss. I mean, the ones that have still got a lot of inventory left, you put a pencil to it, it's you know, quite a blow, and
yeah.
We had that dry spell in May, and, you know, corn was rolling, and so they didn't contract, and so now they wish they'd have contracted more. And so, yeah, there's a lot of lamenting out there. But basically speaking, I think a lot of them have some pretty good coverage, the ones with good ground anyway.
All right. And then what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn is $3.27, beans $7.91, cash wheat is $5.44.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. She joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather forecast for the Midwest and around the globe. I'm going to take time now to invite you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find daily updates of the commodity markets in the form of MP3 files of the radio programming you hear each and every day on this station. You can download that directly from the website, or if you'd like, you can sign up to have it delivered to you as a podcast. My favorite way is using iTunes, but you can find another way if you like. It's really simple to do. It's all right there at willag.org. Up next, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Murder charges are expected to be filed yet today against two Chicago men arrested after last month's crime spree in Douglas County. Chief Sheriff's Deputy Tommy Martin died last night, 3.5 weeks after he was shot along a Douglas County road. Yusef Kareem Brown and William Thompson are charged with shooting Martin. Those charges are expected to be upgraded to first-degree murder. Between the two, they face 48 counts. Thompson faces additional charges for his role in a hostage incident at an Arcola bank after the shooting incident. Earlier, they allegedly robbed a house near Camargo and stole a car. Senate President Emil Jones says consumers will benefit from an upcoming electric rate relief package in Illinois because he blocked a rate freeze that wouldn't have worked. Jones says the $1 billion deal being finalized would never have happened if House Speaker Michael Madigan and others would have had the rate freeze they pushed for. Jones says the freeze was bad public policy and wouldn't have provided immediate relief because it would have been tied up in court. Some lawmakers have argued the threat of a rate freeze itself prompted the utility companies to come up with more cash for consumers. But Jones argues it was his push for a negotiated agreement instead of another freeze that led to a deal that could be announced and voted on soon. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels is ordering a new property tax reassessment in Marion County, the state's largest. Homeowners there have seen big increases in their bills. The Daniels administration suspects there are also problems with assessments in four other counties. Meanwhile, the governor is announcing a commission to study ways to reorganize local government in Indiana. That commission will be led by former Democratic Governor Joe Kernan and State Supreme Court Chief Justice Randall Shepard. A Chicago family has agreed to $1 million settlement with a dentist who was treating a 5-year-old girl who later died from a routine procedure. Attorney Robert Clifford says the settlement is inadequate, but the family accepted it because it was the full value of Dr. Hisham Reba's insurance policy. Tenor Jerry Hadley died today, 2 days after doctors removed the noted operatic singer from life support. Police believe Hadley shot himself in the head July 10th at his home in New York and never recovered from the wound. He was 55 years old. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, we've got quite a little bit of rainfall here in Champaign County. Has that been widespread across the Midwest this week?
It certainly has for some areas, not necessarily all that great in other areas, but I think we're going to bring out a good equalizer here over the next 48 hours, and those areas that haven't gotten decent rain probably will, especially in the central and maybe some southern portions of the region. The greatest rains the past couple of days have been from Iowa through the north half of Illinois into a few areas randomly as far to the east and south as Kentucky. But we have another round of rain coming up for this evening and overnight tonight that will be focused on the northwestern Corn Belt initially, which will be great news for some of those producers up there in South Dakota and Iowa, where it's been dry for several weeks. Showers and thunderstorms occur from South Dakota through the northern and two-thirds of Iowa and extreme southern Minnesota, and then those storms overnight tonight will work their way across Illinois into parts of Kentucky as we go through the day tomorrow and into Friday morning, finally. And we'll see another half-inch to an inch and a half of rain in a general sense across this region. Probably see some localized amounts, again, getting up into the 1 to 3 inch range in a few spots. One of those areas that's favored at the moment may be north-central Iowa and south-central sections of Minnesota. But anyway, by the time we're done with all this precipitation on Friday morning, most of the eastern Midwest and at least two-thirds, if not three-fourths, of the western Corn Belt will have received some rain, and crop conditions will have improved at least a bit across the majority of the region.
All in all, it looks like it's shaping up to be an awfully good growing season. Any problems you foresee on the weather front?
Not in the immediate near future. We have managed to keep La Nina a non-event. In other words, we have neutral ENSO conditions out there at the moment. La Nina keeps trying to develop but can't seem to do it. And as long as that remains the case, we will not have that as an influence on Midwest weather. And the other issue that we've been talking about off and on all year long is that Pacific Decadal Oscillator, which basically keeps track of sea surface temperatures in the North Pacific Ocean, And what we've been looking for is some cooling to occur in the eastern Pacific Ocean in a significant sense, and that has not occurred. If it does occur, it would help to maybe give the Midwest a little bit of a drier, warmer finish to the summer season. But so far, that has not occurred as a trend, and so there looks to be a lot of reason to believe that other periods of timeliness on rainfall will occur as we go through late July and on into August.
It's rounded out by checking in on the Chinese corn crop. Their growing season has been progressing fairly well. And then if you could give me a quick update on how things are looking for the planting season as it starts to roll around the corner in South America.
All right. Well, first of all, in China, the only place that has a dryness issue today is Heilongjiang, which is the northeasternmost province in the country. It is a very big soybean producer and very, very important. Their soil situation is a little bit on the dry side at the moment. It is not what I would consider critical at the moment, but if we don't get better rains in the next couple of weeks, it might become more of an issue. They do produce both corn and soybeans there, but I'm more concerned about the soybean crop because I think the corn has had some time at rainfall there. But that's the only place in China that has an issue with dryness. There's a lot of east central China that's been too wet and flooded here recently. That South America outlook that you were asking about is going to be hinged upon, again, whether or not we do or do not get involved with a La Nina event. If we do get a La Nina event to occur, southern portions of Brazil may eventually see a below-average precipitation bias during the spring and early part of their summer season, which could threaten some of the production potential down there in the south. This is, of course, pure speculation at this point in time. And as far as Argentina is concerned, we are quite cold right now and pretty dry. Their winter wheat crop is not very well established, and they do need warmer weather. They're not going to get it for a while. Next week looks to be quite cold. Argentina will have to warm up and get some needed precipitation before we come close to spring season for them.
Drew, thanks much.
Have a great afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.